Rebecca Solnit is the author of a book called A Field Guide to Getting Lost. For Solnit, the phrase getting lost has many meanings, as she told Steve Paulson.
There's this sort of literal getting lost, oh no, I don't know where I am, it's a problem, what do I do next? But even that poses interesting questions. You know, you don't know what's going to happen next, you don't know where you are. Is it an adventure? Have you extended beyond the bounds of your own safety, your own knowledge? Is there something to be discovered? Will you become somebody else when you find out where you are? And so navigating that danger and discovery, that going beyond the sort of safe and familiar and contained is about, is something that interests me a lot, as is coming to terms with a world in which we don't really know what's going to happen next, in which we're not lost necessarily geographically, but maybe more metaphysically, more in terms of a world full of surprises, lost temporally.
So there's an art to getting lost, to really letting go and encountering the unknown.
Yeah, and this book is written against the grain of the moment we're in, I think, which is very much about safety, familiarity, control, about having your cell phone and GPS and automatic garage door opener and parking garage and everything else. Really contain your experience so that you don't find yourself beyond your own knowledge or beyond the familiar much. And I'm interested in what happens when you do get beyond, particularly since if you're really paying attention, I think, and really living your life, you find out that you're beyond all the time. You turn out not to be who you thought you were. The person you're married to turns out to be somebody else too. Your life opens up in ways you could have never planned for. The world itself changes in amazing ways.
You also write about the idea of losing someone close to you, which can be very painful, like your friend Maureen. Can you tell me what happened?
Maureen was a very close friend of mine until I was 27, and she was just 24, I think, when she died. And, you know, and it's a chapter about talking about that landscape of ruins and regeneration, about death and life, about that adolescent fascination with death, as a sense that this life won't go on forever. But I also think, as, you know, if anybody listening thinks about who they were when they were 15 or 20 and who they are if they're over 30 or over 40, who you become is absolutely unimaginable. And death itself is kind of easier to imagine, you know, which is part of that adolescent romance with death. And so that chapter's really about the kind of getting lost that this wild adolescence is about, and the kind of fear of getting lost that I think can be a kind of self-destruction, as is getting completely out of control. That might not be perfectly coherent, but it's really about navigating between being stuck and being so out of control that it's fatal.
Well, you write about how there were some things that you really admired about Maureen. I mean, she had this abandon, this way of charging into adventure without worrying about the consequences, and really exploring untapped territories, including the far reaches of consciousness, and perhaps in ways that you weren't quite willing to go. But in the end, it caught up with her. I mean, she died taking a double shot of heroin and speed.
Well, she didn't take the speed. It was given to her when she overdosed on heroin, and it was the speed that killed her. But you can read it both ways, and that's what I like, that it is irresolvable. Is taking lots of drugs an adventurous going beyond and getting lost, or is it really avoiding what else is going on? Is it a sort of way of being stuck, of not exploring, you know, the sort of pains that and traps that you're in, of not finding a real way out of them? And, you know, I'm not so interested in finding a resolution to that. It's just raising the question and looking at, you know, how do you travel? Where does it take you? Or do you get stuck? Does it kill you? Or do you lead a life so safe, which is alternative, that you have no adventures, no discoveries, no developments? How do you find that middle way?
Now, loss figures prominently in country music, and I gather that you are a bit of a country music fan yourself, and there are, there's one song you write about, Long Black Veil, a song made famous by Johnny Cash. Can you tell me what this has to do with getting lost?
Long Black Veil fascinates me, partly because it's an extraordinary song, like this gothic novella in 12 lines. And when I finally looked up the lyrics on the internet, I was shocked how short it was, that all this passion and drama and betrayal and romance and landscape, you know, was about the length of a sonnet. You know, except that sonnets don't get refrains and voices and guitars, of course. It's about betrayal and death and adultery and all those good things.
And it's sung by someone who has died,
yeah,
who has been
killed.
Yeah, died
10 years ago because the woman he was sleeping with didn't speak up to give the alibi he needed to not hang for a murder he didn't commit. And, of course, she didn't speak up because he was her husband's best friend, for those of you who don't know Blonde Black Veil. But what's fascinating about that is that, you know, in some sense it's very tragic about loss, but that sense of the landscape. She walks these hills in a long black veil.
She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees. Nobody knows but me.
There's such a richness in that sense of place, of geography, of romance. And that's one of the things that fascinates me, is that you can be rich in loss, too. You know, and there's a sense in these songs, in film noir and noir novels, and a lot of things, and I hope in my own writing, that these places are also characters in your life who, in some senses, are immortal and if not unchanging, permanent in some way, that these presences are also huge parts of your life. And so you lose a person, but you leave a place, or you get lost in a place. But the place is there, and that presence, I think, also bears on what getting lost and what loss means, these places that preside like deities over dreams and imaginations and country and western songs.
Now, it's worth pointing out that you live in San Francisco, and the classic Hitchcock film Vertigo is filmed in San Francisco or thereabouts, and it's often seen as kind of almost an ode to San Francisco. And, well, getting lost is a very real part of that film as well, isn't it?
Well, it's funny. There's a lot of ways to read the film. And the simplest story is this kind of Freudian obsession with a woman who turns out to be a fiction, but a fiction so compelling that lead character forces a real woman to become her all over again and kills her through that fiction in some sense. But there's other ways to read it. And so the love between the characters is always kind of stilted and strained and blighted. He doesn't really want to see the real woman, Judy. He wants to see the fiction, Madeline. He doesn't even let her be herself. He doesn't really want to know her.
This is the Jimmy Stewart character,
the
Scotty.
The Jimmy Stewart protagonist, Scotty. And so the real protagonist, you know, the official protagonist really doesn't want to know, really doesn't have insight and awareness and discovery. He's stuck in some way. But the film is in love with San Francisco and is nothing but exploration of place and does want to know the place and does go all over and does get into it deep. And so there you have a conundrum like country music of, you know, a story between human beings that's kind of blighted and limited and ends badly, but a story about place that's never ending. And there's a lot of parts of the San Francisco in the movie are still there, the views, the Fort Point where she falls into the water, and then, you know, the hills that they chase around in cars on, even his house on Lombard Street is still there. You know, and so that's part of what fascinated me with the movie, was that rich sense of place and that poor sense of love.
Now, there's a scene in Vertigo where the Jimmy Stewart character, Scotty, asks the Kim Novak character, Madeline, if she doesn't think it's a waste of time that she always goes out wandering separately when they could wander together. And she replies by saying, well, only one is a wanderer and two together are always going somewhere. And that seems to get at what you're talking about here.
Yeah, yeah. Even though other people, grandmothers, friends, ex-lovers, etc., are really important to this book, the solitude is as well. I think we're so obsessed with the social in this historical moment, too, with the family, with, you know, social status, with never being alone through the miracle of our cell phones, etc., that there isn't that much about solitude. And that solitude, that even that space between home and work, you know, those little bits of time, I think, are where you muse. You wander in the landscape of your own imagination as well as in the landscape of the surface of the earth. And that space is the real subject of this book in some ways, that double space, the physical spaces you wander to discover those spaces within yourself, and that I think we don't explore quite as much as we could these days.
There's that phrase, to lose yourself. What does that mean to you?
It's a wonderful phrase. It really suggests that getting lost can be an intentional act, and that some of the writers I quote speak to very wonderfully. Walter Benjamin, for example, saying that to not know your way, you know, I'm paraphrasing, to not know your way is nothing special, but to lose yourself, that's an art. And I think it really suggests that state of immersion, where even if you're someplace familiar, you're so absorbed in the experience, it's new again, you're seeing what you didn't see before, you're discovering as though for the first time. I think there's just a kind of immersion, you know, in those conversations where you forget where you are, in those movies that when the lights go on and you walk out into the world you knew before, you're kind of blinking and amazed and not quite there. I think that full immersion also is a wonderful experience of getting lost, of being fully present. And then it suggests that if being fully present is to be lost in some ways, then that kind of hanging on to those kind of safety nets and life preservers keeping you from being fully there, fully immersed, might be something worth losing. And there, of course, you get into the conundrum of what do you need to lose to leave behind, to get fully lost, to lose yourself in the possibilities, in the present, in the richness of the moment, in the person with you, in where you are, and, of course, in your own thoughts.
Rebecca Solnit is the author of A Field Guide to Getting Lost. She spoke with Steve Paulson.